have found that in order to get full coverage on YouTube, you have to have copyright-free music, because I'm all about getting that bag. You cannot get monetized. If you have anything that resembles possible copyright infringement. Therefore, I had to change my name. A new year, a new time for podcasting. And I had to get a funky beat to basically express what I want to put out in the atmosphere. And this is Tenfro. I'm back again. I'm a social critic, thought leader, but I'm more reclusive and cranky. But I want to read, watch, cook, and just share all things that make me happy. My wish is that this increases the curiosity of the listening audience to come back for more and to share with friends. I want 1 million unique listeners and downloads. I want creative quality Millie to be known around the world. Won't he do it? Yes, he will. So if you're listening to me on YouTube, click subscribe. Tip a sister. And I just want to thank you guys for listening. And enjoy and get your bop on. Copyright free.
My homegirl, Naquita J.L. Moore, Najee. Lift every chair and swing till all them white folks scream. Thought y'all could run up on our black king. I'm glad the squad pulled up, dedicated to Nuck. If you buck, may it resound loud as the rolling sea.
In this episode of Woke History, I've had like multiple thoughts, and it seems that to me that I've integrated not only my woke history lessons, but also what I'm reading in this particular part of the episode. And I don't want to make it too long or too drawn out. Sometimes it comes off kind of dark, and I don't want that. I want to just educate and uplift. And I want to keep it as light as possible. That's why I come up with pithy titles and things like that, because I want to draw people in. But in this part of the woke history, we hear all this back and forth about the hypocrisy of the Republican Party, and how voting for lesser of two evils and being Democrats. But it wasn't so long ago that the Democrats won't shit. And it boggles the mind that all they can think of during an election year is to ban TikTok. I hate to break this to you, y'all. China, espionage, Russian interference, they have equal access to many platforms and infiltrate and hacks. Some of the best hackers are behind the former communist bloc. In Europe, Western Europe, and Russia, and the Chinese got everything on fleek because they have government-sponsored hackers. All of those things said, TikTok is not going to destroy us, but it can basically get you voted out of office, because the vast majority of the people that you want, these Gen Xers and Gen Yers and XYZers, these alphabet kids, they communicate and they pontificate on that particular social media. Old heads like me are just trying to figure it out. I'm just making clips with my dog and me in my pool or hot tub to Beyonce. You're not going to get a whole bunch of nothing from me. My vote is sealed. There is nothing that will make me vote for any foolish Republican unless they come off, you know, and I'll be honest with you. The last Republican I actually voted for, and I'm actually strong enough because I'm fresh out of, that I voted for was when I was down in Texas. This is the governor. At that time, I was in residency, and I thought G-Dub, George Bush, was good for Texas at that time. Texas is also one of those states that they don't really think to a certain extent. They're kind of like Tennessee, too. They don't really think that they are part of the United States. It's always been that way. His daddy, his brothers, all of them, they like the Kennedys, long-term gangster Republicans for years. His daddy, 90 years old and jumping out of planes in a wheelchair. That's the kind of gangster on the level of gangster of Republicans the Bushes are. All of that said, they could put my dog, Ethel. This is the Democrats. In place of Joe Biden. And I'll still vote Democrat because I will never, ever vote for any of the selections for Republican. And I say all that previously to say that GW was good for Texas at the time, but he was not a good president. He was chumming up with Michelle Obama. I thought that was cute. Him pout after he left office. And the camaraderie and the camaraderie between him, Clinton, and President Obama, I get all of that. But this is what I don't get. I don't get a group that will willfully vote for a psychopath / sociopath, because I'm finding out by watching the making of a sociopath on Max. Those terms are interchangeable and criminal. This chump winning the majority of the primaries for president again. And he has his dog and ponies in the Supreme Court. You mean to tell me you can have over 100 open indictments and you can still be on somebody's ballot on a national election? Girl, bye. Barack Obama or Kamala Harris can have one unpaid traffic ticket, and you best believe they would not be able to run for anything or be anywhere. They trying to make up shit and say it's true to get you kicked off the brother, to get kicked off the ballot. That whole birther fiasco. So you mean to tell me y'all would actually allow him? Now, Nimrod and DeFura DeSantis, they are not good for this country either. But definitely they are a safer choice than that fool. But you would rather say you got a group of people that are willing to vote for a psychopath, sociopath, criminal with open indictments, known for being brutal and stealing. And you say y'all would actually vote for him to come in again after everything that's known. You'd rather vote for him. I'm going to let you think about that. Sit in that. And you're saying it's okay. And you think that somebody's mama or somebody that behind in front of your face, playing in your face, and you all these Karens that think calling yourselves allies, y'all ain't no allies because y'all still voting for that criminal. I say all of these things to say, it wasn't so long ago that the Democrats at the top of the 20th century was doing some fuck shit. They basically, in Wilmington, North Carolina, of all places, there were several thousand more black folks than there were white. It had the most integrated society, several businesses, black-owned businesses, a small, truly upper middle class of black folks. And for once, they were at peace until the elections came around, where the white Democrats basically had a smear campaign and then basically rolled in and started wrecking shit. Basically took over the police, took over the mayor. Basically, it was so bad that the governor was like, and this is, I didn't know, instead of Raleigh, it was in Wilmington at the time, that the governor basically wrote a letter of concern to President McKinley and was concerned about there being a race riot. Because these fools, the red shirts, Democrats, KKK, were going around and rolling people out. They basically, there were chartered trains and everything. And then when they would get to the next stop in North Carolina, there were sharpshooters on the water towers, so you couldn't even get out at the next place. Because they were literally escaped from Wilmington. They were on some next level-ish that I can't even imagine. Straight up terror. The people were just, it seems when people think that their rights are being, that their status, this was true straight up status. People that had status was concerned that their status, that we were getting to, we didn't deserve it. And it took away from their status. These are some of the most insecure MFers I've ever had. And then there were other people that were not middle class, that were struggling farmers and the trash of the society. This was their time to, they really thought that the rich planters and the businessmen were going to allow them to at once get ahead. And they kind of did, because all the black farmers that basically bounced because they were getting burned out, beat up and judged, they basically were on the train and got. And they basically, a lot of the farms were confiscated and probably given to the rich landowners like a reverse. All the equality that happened during Reconstruction and over subsequent years, all of that stuff reversed. They basically were gunning for all of these black farms for years. And then in one fell swoop of terror, they basically came in, Democrat led, KKK, red shirts, rolled in and basically confiscated what they steal. I've noticed that the majority race, if they can't beat you by playing fair, they'll go dirty and they don't mind going dirty. I used to think that was in the realm of what Republicans would. We'll cheat. And that's what Trump was. He'll just say, okay, change the rules. That's what, you know, they did with the golfer. They basically made the courses so hard just because of, oh my goodness, why can't I remember this former golfer? Oh gosh. I can't believe Tiger Woods. You know how they kept changing the rules and they just make the golf courses harder? It was the same thing with the Voter Act and the vote, and they just make it harder. The red shirts were basically standing around and intimidating black voters in Wilmington during the election to intimidate them from the polling places. So a lot of black, and who they couldn't intimidate that were left there, a lot of them were on the train and threw up the peace sign. They keep changing the rules, or then they just took to just straight up gangster and just intimidated to keep people away. because they knew they were going to lose. So they were truly going to steal the election. And they did. And there seemed to be no repercussions. And it's just recently people started moving back to that area in North Carolina. For years, North Carolina was and has been known as probably one of the racist states, the start of that veil of racism. Now they sweet tea you to death. There's still markers of racism in some of these towns that have since basically had to either resurrect themselves or become incorporated. So it's still there, but it's becoming, there's a resurgence of these small municipalities that are rewarded for being completely red and racist. But it didn't start with the Republican Party. It started with Democrats, smear campaigns, raids, lynchings. And that's where I come up with Ida B. Wells versus Booker T. I was reading Ida, her story, and I was just shocked. Well, not really. I kind of suspected a lot of things. This is the time of a lot of political changes. The increase, the civil rights. Ida B. Wells, for most of her life, fought anti-lynching. And it wasn't even until recently there have been some legislation that have only taken 100 years, y'all, to get pushed through. But the work actually started with Ida B. Wells and the Negro League. But even during the what was called the Wilmington Massacre, even through the lynching of Sam Hose, you get these apologist, populist people like Booker T. During that time, the great Booker T. Washington. Yes, he did very great for industrial education, the establishment of the Tuskegee Institute. But on the flip side of that, people like President McKinley would align themselves with Millie Mouse like him because, and not more radical like Ida B. and others of that age, because he would say a lot of things. We should dress neatly, be clean, and work hard. But that still didn't keep them from lynching and accusing Sam Hose and lynching and basically mutilating and then selling his body, parts of his body. His lynching was touted as almost like a festival. That's the kind of nonsense that was happening in Georgia and all throughout the South in the early 20th century, even until present day. We got people that came at Ida B. because she spoke the truth and she wasn't nice about it. She didn't have time. She was married and she had all these kids, massive family. She did not have time to basically sugarcoat anything because of the urgency of the issues. We're talking about festival-like atmosphere surrounding lynchings, which are illegal and murder unto themselves. You call yourselves judge and executioner in some of the things. We call it police brutality. Same thing was happening with lynching. When somebody was accused of something and hung, it was because they were trying to keep all of us in our place. Those strange fruits was a signal to the entire community. Don't try to be more than you are. Don't try to think you're equal than us, because you will end up dead at the end of an executioner's rope. And nobody is going to help you. You couldn't have the help of McKinley. And then people wonder why we haven't snapped. Yeah, there's a reason why we try to keep it together, because we know our reward for the endurance, but we're not going to tolerate a whole bunch of nonsense. And that's why she was shaded by people within the league itself, temperance and suffrages, how they basically backstab Miss Ida. That's the thing that kills me, how you can have other women that will try to block your blessing and then end up blocking yours. If you could find some way to collaborate, that all the greater cause, for the greater cause, how farther along would society be if they learn instead of collaborate, instead of backstab? That's the other thing that trips me out. A lot of people will cut off their nose in spite of their face just because they see you either as a threat or because of their own insecurities. And there's no place for that in any type of movement, but there it was. And even in spite of that, Ida B did so much for the movement with her anti-lynching campaign. She outshone her husband. She had to run up against that misogyny and also just straight up racism. A lot of what I called white supremacist mimicry being in the guise of polite politics. So with those things, woke history is, if you can't think of anything other than banning a social media platform and you calling it something else, let us not forget there are other things that y'all need to be focusing on, especially during an election year. And Democrats, y'all have done y'all dirt too, and y'all have an image to change. You may not want to ban one of those platforms from the largest group of potential voters, because it's not lost on us that there are a lot of other social ills that need to be addressed more so than y'all banning TikTok. Because we're not going to forget what truly is ill. High gas prices, food prices outrageous, homelessness. There are some serious issues that people are dealing with, and their constituencies are dealing with, that are more important than the banning of TikTok. And that's all I got to say about that. I tried to record my podcast with headphones. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So, and it may be hard because I just have to turn it down, but she's funny. This is the baddies part of the podcast in celebration of Women's History Month. I basically had to come to Virginia for the start of a trial. I thought I would have recorded most of this while I was actually on the other side of Barton, but I didn't have the opportunity to do it. So now I'm sitting, I guess I'm in my big adventure. I'm sitting in my RV at the KOA in Virginia Beach, recording this and watching the Leslie M.F. Jones, one of her first comedy specials. Most people know Leslie Jones from her time on Saturday Night Live. But since I never watched Saturday Night Live, I knew her just like peripherally when she starred in, she was in Coming to America 2, and I've seen her on other, like in film. I don't think until this weekend that I actually watched her, this comedy special, because this was from a long time ago, from like 2010, 2011. And that's her yelling. She's just me. They say she's kind of blue, but then she destroys every set that she's on. And she's hilarious. And I didn't know, realize how tall she was. You know, Hollywood are not, she has great skin too, moisturized. But anyway, Hollywood are not favorable to black women that look like her. She's 6 feet tall. She's very dark, but she's gorgeous. I knew her, like, again, peripherally from her hair. She has like a wrap now, short, but she's known for having like that faux hawk hairstyle. And I always thought she was a little nuts. And she plays up to that, very physical comedian, matter of fact. But not only did I, why, and you ask me, why is she in, why am I like at putting her as a baddie, because she is. And why do I know of her? Because I own Audible. And I don't own Audible. I subscribe to Audible. And I had finished listening to, listening to her autobiography, Leslie fucking Jones. She curses a lot. She is, but she's like freaking hysterical. I had finished listening to Unbound by Tarana Burke. And you say, how do you go from that, Tarana Burke's book, to Leslie Jones's book? Very easily. Their past is very traumatic. Tarana Jones basically used her energy to fuel her Me Too work. Leslie Jones, just as great, and I may add, is making a whole bunch of money for doing it. She has used her traumatic background and has made it a part of her distinct comedy. I look at her and she reminds me of Carol Burnett and other physical comedians, but she has a style of her own. She uses her whole body. She uses her stature. She's tall and she doesn't care. She has a foul mouth and she admits to the shortcomings in her memory because of the amount of weed she smoked from 2000 to the present. So it, to me, actually from 97 until the present. So for 30 some odd years, she's been blazing up. And like Snoop Dogg, she has had access to the greatest and great weed, because at one point in her book, she lived with Rastafarians. I say all of these things, I have many more to say about her. One, I didn't realize just how funny she is. And I'm glad to not have to go back to the time when she was on Saturday Night Live. I think between the book and between me watching her comedy specials, I'm going to get all I need to know and enjoy with. And if she comes out with something else, like she hosted the BET Awards, I may have to look that up, because I know, again, she's hilarious. And how much she stayed on script, because over at BET, they're into that looks and respectability politics. I just can't imagine her trying to be small, or her and trying to contain her big personality in that constricted environment. Chris Rock, basically, he actually did the foreword on her book. She said, when he mentioned that she wasn't ready, she meant, what he did say is, the world or the audience, the general audience, was not ready for her brand of comedy, because she had been on the grind for years before Chris Rock actually mentioned to Lauren Michaels to get her gig on Saturday Night Live. Can you imagine if Lauren Michaels was on some sexist shit like that, like, what's his name? Or even Chris Rock was on some sexual predator shit like Russell Simmons and L.A. Reid were, and if they had passed on her because they would have thought that she shouldn't be promoted, or she would have been the Kanye or the John Legend of that career. You know what I mean? So, big personality. She talks about, and you can't be 6 feet and athletically inclined in the African-American community without balling. And that's what she did. From the time she was 12 through the time before she dropped out of college, she wait a minute, she's actually flicking off pretty audience members. She is hysterical. What? What? And doing it with some fever. That's funny. She is hysterical. But anyways, she used basketball as a means to an end, but she never had the passion to ball out like how some this is, she was playing basketball before there was a WNBA. She's a fan of the WNBA, but she said she never had that passion because at that point you could still go overseas and as a female and make a living playing basketball. Never did that because she discovered that she, not only was she funny, like most black people are, but she was actually, she discovered she really wanted to be a comedian. Did not want to be a starving artist. That wasn't her gig. So she worked at the post office, had many other jobs, which most of them ended with her cussing out her manager. I can see that. Because can you, again, can you imagine containing her large, larger than life personality in four walls? I just can't imagine that, unless it's some type of theater where she's doing comedy specials and killing it. She goes in, I didn't know that she's also from Memphis, Tennessee, spent a lot of her childhood in different places because her family was moved because her father was former in the Army, sergeant in the Army, electronics engineer, she said. And he fought in Korea and Vietnam. He ended up dying of alcoholism, long-term effect of chronic alcoholism. Her mother also had issues. It sounds like she had an issue with her platelets or ITP, had strokes, bedridden before she was 40. He ended up passing away, horrible death from cirrhotic liver or liver disease. She talks about how black people need to have insurance and how neither one of her parents did, how she had to go on the road to make the money to help pay for their funerals. And then she goes off and she says, cusses them out, calls them selfish MFers, saying, how can you die and not so your family don't have to scramble to do that ish. And her brother, who she doesn't sound like she liked all that much because he was a petty MFer and jealous of her success, and then would complain when she wouldn't give her anything. And he, I don't think he ever, and it sounds like from her book, he never knew what he actually wanted or didn't want, but he would take her dissatisfaction with his shortcomings out on her because of her, any degree of success, he would, of her success, he couldn't celebrate it because of jealousy, which was sad. He stole money from her. Everything he did was self-induced. All of his memories, all the drama with the baby mamas. And she dealt with all of it. And she put it, and you would become a part of her act. Because the way a most successful comics ended up taking their pain, and if they're good enough storytellers. And I was actually happy. She, unlike most comedians that Cat Williams have recently dragged, she obviously respects the craft and she writes her own stuff. She talks about stuff that she wrote like 20 years ago that now she's fashioning and she's using in her act. And she writes her own stuff. She doesn't have to steal anything from anybody else. She can admire the physicality of different comedians and some of the things they say, but she has, what she says is uniquely Leslie Jones. She talks about waking up her friend, waking her up when 9/11, because she was in Brooklyn at the time. She asked, was Jesus a Republican? I haven't gotten into most of that chapter yet, but I'm excited about, I'm looking forward to listening to that. She moved to her apartment in Hollywood. She lived there for 10 years and worked right around the corner from the Comedy Store. And she talks about racist bookers, that books those rooms, how even comedy is racist. And there's still a whole bunch of firsts. So I end this with some sage advice from her grandmother. She said, don't shit on a nigga's grave or shit on a nigga if he's on fire. That means never give money to a man. And that's what she left during her big mama's funeral. That's what the advice she gave to the audience. And how you gonna kill at a funeral? I can't. I just. So Leslie Jones, not only as a baddie, but also on just one of the people that on my bucket list of just amazing humans that I really would love to meet. I don't know if I would be able to talk to her because I would be thinking, man, if I say something dumb as hell, she gonna go off on me. I don't want to be read by Leslie Jones. That's like I would be honored to even meet Cat Williams. But I don't want to be read by him or him thinking or coming at me with the curveball and making me look crazy because she could do that too. But she definitely is on my list of admired women that I would love to meet and just to shake their hand and just for me to tell them, it is an honor to meet you. You funny as hell. Please keep doing what you're doing. And thank you for entertaining me. And yes, I did pay for the ticket, full price. The Shade Bunch, The Shade Bunch. I hope turning up for checks to pay for fake lifestyles were to be a part of The Shady Bunch. So previously I discussed Leslie Jones. Also alludes to not only in her stand-up specials but also on her book the beginnings of her faux hawk. Her brother passed away of inauspicious circumstances. By the time he passed, she basically was an orphan and she was alone. All of her immediate family had passed away. And it seems like they passed away all within a very short period of time. It was easier for her to deal with her brother's remains, as it were, because she had taken out an insurance policy for him. She had him cremated, and then what was left over of the policy, she was actually able to move. But that's neither here nor there. But the way she dealt with her grief and having to get back to work and how she was filming a movie with Ice Cube at the time, she basically lost herself in her work. And that's how she dealt with her grief. And she transformed her grief and the pain. And it made her who she was as a comedian. And she cultivated a show just from her experience, her true experiences. And it was hilarious. And the faux hawk came about because she says she's always cut and ready. She had just come off closed on the movie, but she hadn't been wrapping and covering her upper hair. But it was good going. It was like standing straight on end. She says she's always permed and ready. And that came after she had just come from the funeral and just wrapped, I guess, filming of her new movie. And she has this great hair. And that's what I remember her from. I don't remember any of the time on YouTube, and I'm going to go back on YouTube, on SNL. I never saw her before this weekend, her stand-up. She's hilarious. It's so funny. Now I want to see her kill it on her first daily report on SNL and look up some of the clips of her when she was on. Because she left, I think she was off of SNL by 2019. But it's not going to make me watch the whole show, but I'm going to go and look up more clips of her. And I thought I needed to start out this next segment with that. Because I am then switched over to podcast roundup and just Carlos King. His podcast trips me out. He is so messy. And he was messier having Marlo Hampton on the show. And how he got her on the show, he says, she would be great to be on The Bold and Bougie. And one of somebody says, well, you know, she is available now because, you know, they didn't renew her for Housewives, and that good so, because I don't think she was good as a peach holder or a full-time housewife. But he was just so shady. And it's obvious that they do have respect for each other, and but they will read each other, because that's exactly what Marlo did. I think if we had saw more of this Marlo, and if we had saw the lighter side instead of her drumming up mess, I think I would have been more inclined to still continue to support and watch it and like her. If, because she's Botox and Ozempic ready, girl. But she, the messy, mean, dark side of her being on this, on Housewives, is the reason why she is no longer a full-time housewife. And I don't understand, how can you be a housewife of anything when you're not even really dating anybody and you ain't married and you never been married? I don't get it. But as a stuck-up snooty hoe, yeah, that's her. I did learn something. West East Paces Ferry in Atlanta is better than Buckhead. And when you know, you know. And I just keep going back to how this former BMF escort is so snotty. But I guess she can. She reinvented herself, Marlo Hampton. I think her name, real name is Shaniqua. Who knows? But she did make several great points about the show. How these women, they can argue, but they can come back because it's not that serious. And yes, Dr. Princess was shading Crystal. For those of you that are not familiar with Juan the Bold and Bougie, it is from Rain, Kingdom Rain production. It's, I think it's on BET or OWN. And it's a show about a collection of women in Atlanta that in their own right all have a story, have a significant story, and have been through a lot of stuff. One of the women is Crystal, who was infamously either dating or married to what's Monietta Shaw's ex-boyfriend, Neo. She was supposedly had been the homewrecker of that relationship, but who cares? Because Monietta Shaw is married now and seems to be happily married. But Crystal is the new, was now is the ex-partner of Neo. And they basically, the old people used to say, the same way you get them, same way you lose them. And I think he cheated on her too. But they seem to be coming after the twerk queen, fun girl of the show. And that, for whatever reason, they're going to have to figure out if they're going to be real with her and how she's going to fit into the show. And it seems like a lot of them wish they could just release and be free and twerk alongside of her. Because I think if they have the same needs, they can all get it. You know what I mean? And why is it? Because it's nothing that serious. It was serious enough that she left his cheating Roman. But if they were supposed to, if he wants to be polyamorous or have an open relationship and she's not into it, then they don't need to be together, because that toxicity, nobody wins. The kids don't need it. Definitely she don't need it. And y'all need to keep it pushing. But y'all don't need to blame her for something that her man did. It's not that crucial. And she ain't with him no more. They're not in a relationship anymore. So she can twerk and do whatever she wants to on her own dime. She bought the body for it. That's all I, and that's all I got to say about that. But I think it's a unique situation because according to Hamptons, she doesn't understand why they're so kissy uppy on Monietta Shaw, because she made a comment. She didn't know that Gaucher was gay. And it's like how you can have known of somebody and be in the same, in the periphery of the same social circles, but never know, but it's all surface. So this is like an experiment, a social experiment, of how deep they're going to get without being too dark. And also, Marlo still holds out that she runs with separate people. She still runs with billionaire yachts. Whoever does her Botox is on Fleek. She's off of Ozempic because she said she got backed up too much. But that's where you have to balance that shit out. Drink plenty of water and eat plenty of vegetables. Because you will be back the fuck up. Because it slows down everything, y'all. But I like this recap. It was funny. And I'm going to be more tuned in and give it more of a chance because I thought it was kind of boring. And I don't see them talking too much about Love and Marriage, DC, because Marlo said she does not watch TV that much. But for the TV that she does watch, she did give good commentary. And also, whoever is beating her face and her stylist is doing an amazing job. I'm going to have to give her that. But this is the Marlo I would have loved to have seen on Real Housewives at all times. She cracks me up as she was fixing her hair and just preening and just, she's so airy and I'm so two steps from the Hamptons or St. Bart's. Girl, bye. And take your country ass back to St. Pete's, what I wanted to tell her. But she did look really good. She was just such on the level of beyond one of the Hiltons. She was just that can't touch me. I'm all of that. I make money in it. I can poop money now that I'm not on Ozempic. That's the thing that really cracks me up. So, but good look. You know, that was actually a good interview. And recap, it wasn't as loud and screechy as his recap with Dr. Heavenly, but it was actually worth the watch. And I think he's probably going to post that on his podcast. This is Carlos King. Is going to post that on his podcast sometime, probably, hopefully in the upcoming week. But you can watch it now on YouTube at Carlos King on his YouTube channel. So it's so wild. I had watched such great content actually in the last couple of hours. I just am a fan of several podcasters, and one in particular is DJ Richie Sky. He's actually was supposedly on vacation in Switzerland, and I'm sitting here in my RV just watching everything as much as I can before I give up the ghost and go to sleep. But DJ Richie Sky, I started listening to or watching his YouTube and subscribing to his YouTube channel right during the last year, or probably a little bit before I started watching Real Housewives and Artists. Because I'm going to be really honest, I wasn't into Real Housewives of Atlanta until, what was it, the 12th season? Or was it season 13? That's when Portia was still on the show. And then she become Portia the King. Maybe it was even after that, because I went and started watching one season and got into it. So I had to go back and stream and binge watch the previous season because I hadn't been into it when it first came on. It's been on for years again. And of course, I didn't watch it. And what I did notice is NeNe Leakes, and she's had a very extravagant career on and off due to this show. And rightfully so. This is also after I watched Marlo Hampton and how they said basically NeNe was styled by Marlo and put on by Marlo. And how there's a princess character in Bold and Bougie that basically cast Marlo. I found that out today, which I thought was wild. And Princess, she's so unassuming. is on the Bold and Bougie, and she has all of this clout to get them where they need to go, and for casting and to for production. I didn't know it's really hard to actually film reality shows in places like Dillard's, which half of the Dillard's are closed now, but that's a whole other story. Well, the one that they had in Atlanta, they allowed them to film that there due to the pull of Princess. But I digress. Evidently, NeNe Leakes, who basically talked her, literally talked herself out of her blessings when she said, Andy, even though he's a shady hoe, he needs to keep NeNe's name out of her mouth. So Andy was like, fine, I don't say you anymore. You ain't come back here. And then that's been that. But not only did he go one step further, it is says she's toxic and she's radioactive and she hasn't been able to work since she left Real Housewives for a variety of reasons. Everybody has lost her number. Even Ryan, when she was on that show, she was the assistant on or producer on that show that ran for a couple of seasons from Glee to Disagree. She no longer had any other work. She said she would go in for these talks and then things would just fizzle out and then no callbacks and people stopped taking her call. And she was very clear about that on Carlos King. And it's different than Monique, but maybe not so, because she became radioactive. She's made a comeback. I didn't know she's going to be on an upcoming. She just shot the upcoming episode of Upshaw's. And evidently, Portia, who was also supposed to be on the same show, the same episode, refused to work with her because of past issues she had with NeNe. And NeNe still shot and evidently got paid for the show. And Cynthia Bailey, who is another former housewife, print model, took Portia's place. Well, that's interesting. Now we know they went from Dubai to saying goodbye, because now Portia basically not only tried to put her mouth on Mimi, like my grandma used to say, talking crap against her, she also also blocked her own blessings. She need all her little change because she is divorcing this con artist. And why is she bringing NeNe into the mix? NeNe was like, she's very confused. She was like, I saw y'all in Dubai and you seem to be good. Why? And Richie Sky made very good points. He's like, why do grown folks bring fans into the group chat? These are topics either you need to take up directly with the person or and directly with your therapist. But we don't need to be in this group chat because you need some professionals to actually help you sort through where this stems from. Because it didn't stop you, the production company, from still working with NeNe and filming, unlike what was happening over the last several years. That check probably cleared. And this is where you can, instead of being difficult, you can still be about your legacy and hardworking and being about it. And I'm sure you're funny, as your shows have been in the past, and it should work for you. And then you could just keep it rolling. I didn't agree with that thing with that other white former housewife, skinny girl. I can't remember. I can't remember her name, but she was on Real Housewives of New York. She made Skinny Girl Vodka and Pop, and she just always seems like she's underweight and underfed. But she's always eating on set, on her shows, and her channel. But she's still very, very underfed looking, drawn, and hungry is what she always looks like. How can you be hungry eating a bowl of cereal? Look hungry and you eat. I just don't get it. That's an eating disorder on fleek. But I digress. He said, take us out of group chat. Portia, stop blocking your own blessings. And why are y'all making this bigger than it actually is? It's confusion AF is what it is. And I also want to go back to a point of the bold and bougie, that I think seeing those women, because it is obvious they've been through so many things, seeing those women going through therapy and seeing them do the work, or seeing them after they have obviously done the work, that actually would, I think, would make for compelling TV. And this is what I think about all of these players, because at one and multiple points, Portia has been in therapy. I would love to see her have went after therapy and her have done the work. Nene also has been in therapy. I want to see her after either going through the process like she was. I forgot the name of the therapist that was with her, but he was on the level of Dr. Kim. He going, seeing her post doing the work and working out her issues are going to have her being accepting and handling a lot of these. I think if she was actively going working this out, she wouldn't be going take it to live. She would actually be taking it as a emergency call with the therapist instead of having and reaching out to us. What are we going to tell you, girl? We don't have your life. I don't think any of us would really truly want your life, because it seems kind of difficult. But working this out and we seeing the after effects of it, or seeing the steps you have to take to basically get to the point where you are accepting of a true professional's opinions, that would make very good, compelling TV. Recap, no recap, how you work through not blocking yourself and your success, that's what we need to see. And as for Portia's sake, she's getting ready to step into another chapter of her life. This is going to be her second divorce. She tried, and they may have been all integrated into each other's families. How are y'all going to work it out? And from an emotional standpoint, how are you going to work this out and come out on the other side unbroken? How about that? And that's it for this episode of Ten Froers Reading. You know, I talked cash-ish all last year. I hope the listening audience will continue to enjoy my opinion and not so subtle shade. I mean, I'm 2,000 listeners per episode in, so go run tell that, haters. I may take it on the road if I get hint sponsorship. Navigate to dalesangelsinc.blog for swag and extended podcast notes. Don't forget to hit like or leave a 5-star review. It gets me on top of the algorithms, and it may just get you on my show. 2023's motto is boss up and get the bag. And as always, tell a friend, and thank you for listening.